From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 31st day of January, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We'll discuss carbon markets, or at least get a little bit of advice from Sarah Sellers, a PhD student, a candidate in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences that has been exploring that avenue. And we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too. We'll do that with Mark Russo at Everstream Analytics. And Greg Johnson will join us from TGM, Total Grain Marketing, to take a look at the cash grain market on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today at $6.26, 10 cents lower on the day. The May contract at $6.24.5, down 8.75. And December futures up 4 at $5.73.5 for the new crop. March soybeans at $14.90.5, 20.5 cents higher. The May at $14.95 at a quarter, up 20 cents. And November soybeans 15.5 higher at $13.67. Bean meal at $418.90, up $7.70. The bean oil 45 cents lower at $64.82. Wheat futures were down 25 at $7.61 and a quarter for the soft red in the lead March. The hard red March at $7.81 and a quarter, down 21 cents. And oat futures up 20 at $6.95 and a half for the afternoon. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the lead option at $144.52 and a half, $1.42 and a half higher. That for the April. The March contract there for the feeders at $163.02 and a half, up $3.40, and lean hogs at $95.70, 77.5 cents higher. Crude oil at $87.94 a barrel, $1.12 higher. Diesel fuel down about a tenth of a cent at $2.71 a gallon, and the wholesale price of gasoline on the RBOB a penny and 2 cents higher. $2.54 and 9 cents of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at about 34,858 points, around 264 points higher. We're joined by Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, to discuss the marketplace. Hi, Kurt. Thanks for being with us on a Monday.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Looks like we're going to get some ugly weather midweek. What do you think that the groundhog will see?
That's a great observation, you bet. It's going to be awful tough for him to see his shadow here midweek. And we'll go with what areas get the sun and which areas are trying to dig out. But that was some kind of interest after we saw the overnight and early morning trade focus on getting done what we need to get done before, most definitely Wednesday morning. The overall trade was fairly aggressive to the upside in the Sunday night open there, basically looking at, continued uncertainty in the southern hemisphere. Also, too, the inflation drum continues to beat. So there's some aggressive buying as we started the evening trade. But as the evening went on into early morning hours, spread activity showed up. They continued to buy the beans, sell the corn, buy the beans, sell the wheat on the spread. The thing is, today, Monday, that is the last day of the month. Commodity funds were, considerably long corn, and I think we just saw some liquidation outright and in the spread activity to kind of get shored up here. Be interesting to see if we'll see some more money come into the complex here. Just about everybody's been bullish or long the marketplace, has finished the month of January here in fairly good shape. This morning we did see 129,000 ton beans sold to China. Half that was old crop, half that's going to be the new crop production 2022. The ag rural came in projected the Brazilian bean crop 128.5 million metric tons versus their last estimate 133.4. In the last government report we saw was Brazil at 139. And the significance of that is the expectations were really, really high before they started putting beans in the ground in the southern hemisphere. They were projecting a Brazilian bean crop of 145 million metric tons. And a lot of the trade was anxious or excited about a big crop being able to buy plentiful supplies out of the southern hemisphere at much lower prices. And that's that's not worked out very well for them here. And so we've seen the world exporters kind of chase the market here, trying to get some coverage on until we get a little better forecast for that southern hemisphere.
And as we wrap up the month of January, and you said that the bulls were all in place or happy to be long at this point, I'm wondering when there might be, especially for the soybean market, any destruction of demand. Is it in the offing anytime soon, or will we continue to climb higher?
Well, originally, if you turn back the calendar here and kind of listen to what some of the analysts were saying, they were looking for a mid-January high, or high right after the January crop report. Seasonally, technically, we kind of roll over then, and if you go back to the old time here, we often had some February lows, but that's just not happened just yet. So we need to kind of keep an eye on it. The first sign is today's chart in the corn particularly, even in the soybean oil. We made a new high for the move, closed lower. In fact, if we would have pressed the thing a little bit more today, we could have had a key price reversal to the downside. So I think the trade's going to look at the 640 area. 642.5 is the March's resistance. And I believe 640 was an old chart point that some of the analysts pointed out to keep an eye on. Then, too, even though the beans did close strong today, we're bouncing up against the $15 benchmark there. So we'll be interesting to see if we can clear that. And the soybeans, they're saying maybe the 2012 highs. You know, if that's the case, we could take a run up towards $18 a bushel if this thing would stay positive and continue to see the funds want to kind of push the market higher and play keep away from the buyers here for a while.
It'll be interesting to see if that plays out during the month of February as we go through the time frame all this month of setting the prices for crop insurance. They will, at least for a day, be above $5 for corn, new crop, and above $13 for soybeans for new crop. I suppose it could be much higher. How should producers think about that as they related to their crop insurance and their acreage decisions?
Yeah, that's going to be the topic conversation. It's going to be kind of exciting or interesting to see what the average price is and how these policies unfold and which way everybody kind of migrates here. Because when you look in past history, I don't have that in front of me there, but this is going to be one of the highest guarantees we've seen in quite some time. And so that coupled with how much these policies are going to cost. So there's going to be some moving parts, but being able to guarantee this high price is step one. Step two is making sure we have some good management practice and production and have the weather cooperate and have some big bushels to work with that. So we're going to need that to offset some of these higher input costs that we're faced with, and also give us some cushion in case this inflation drum continues to beat heavily and loud here over the next year.
It might give an opportunity for producers later in the month, I would think, to lock in, of course, on the crop insurance floor, and then to use that on to market an advantage to market the cash crop. If they want to, they could market it all and then cover it, I suppose, with you in some form.
Oh, boy, you've been paying attention for the last 30 years, because if you go back to the old day, and I'm going to mention Doug Yoder's name. I'm not putting anything in his mouth or anything. He did some studies way, way, way back when. I know the policies have changed over the years, but the strategy that was in the top year after year after year, I think it's in the top three or four about every year, is to, back then, buy the revenue policy, sell your cash insured bushels, and replace ownership of a call option. And that all washed out year after year after year as one of the top strategies to look at. Now, the other moving part, too, is, and we can hit on it a little longer term here, Todd, is these hybrid cash rent contracts now, where if you're guaranteeing some prices here early, you've got to make some marketing or some do some coverage here so you're able to cover the cash rent and stay in business.
Indeed. Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon. You can hear the whole of the program again, if you'd like, at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can just click and play the Closing Market Report or look it up as a podcast, however you'd like to listen. Thank you for taking your time and spending it with us. Here's a quick note about an event that's coming up on campus this weekend, because I like aerospace engineering and some of the history related to Chanute Air Force Base. The Tuskegee Airmen were stationed there at one point during World War II. There will be a film shown at 4 o'clock in the afternoon at the campus instructional facility, and then they'll have a panel discussion. That's from 4 to 6 and goes until 8:30. Again, that's at the campus instructional facility at 1405 West Springfield Avenue. I'll post it onto our website at willag.org if you'd like to go. You're certainly welcome. That's Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock right here on the U of I campus. A film about the Tuskegee Airmen. Up next, the carbon market. Farmers considering selling carbon should be careful when selecting a market and fully understand any conditions, requirements, data ownership structure, and penalties the company might have. It's also essential to understand the specific terms and conditions and negotiate any changes before signing a contract. Third-year PhD student in the College of ACES, Sarah Sellers, has been working through some of these issues with her advisor, Gary Schnittke. I spoke with Sellers, and she has this advice for farmers.
One piece of advice I would give is to keep up with the news and with company websites often. So, like I mentioned, there was a company offering sign-on bonuses last summer. There's been changes in price. There's been changes in programs, in what you can and can't do. And there's a lot of things going on the policy side, too. So I think keeping an eye on these current events is going to be really important. I think reading and watching everything you can find about it when you're thinking about this, when you're wanting to learn more. There's a lot of great resources on YouTube. There's a lot of conferences that have been happening that have been recorded and put on YouTube. So I think there's a lot of great information out there. And of course, talking with other farmers about their experiences. I've heard a lot of different things from farmers. So I think it's important to talk to some different people, get their perspective, get some perspective from people who have tried it, and see what they think. You don't have to commit everything at once. So some programs, they allow you, they don't have a minimum acre enrollment. So you could try it out first, see what you think. And, if you're not locked in for long term, then you don't have to continue in the future. You can just try it out, see what that experience is like for you. I think stackability is going to be important, because you're going to want to, we know there's costs with adopting a lot of these practices, such as cover crops or changing your nitrogen practices. There's going to be costs to that. Most farmers, they want to make sure they can cover that break-even cost of adopting a new practice. So if you have a program that allows you to stack with government payments, that could allow you to hopefully get to above those break-even costs and cover those adoption costs. And also, I think a program that protects your upside potential is important, because like I mentioned, the companies are kind of putting this expectation out there that they think the price may go up. So you want to protect that and make sure you can capture that if that does happen. Another thing to think about is the modeling capabilities of the company. So we spoke to some companies in Alberta where they've been doing this for a while, these agricultural carbon credits. They kind of have a more protocol-based system through the government. So it's a little different, but when that everything kind of started up there, there were 10 companies purchasing agricultural carbon credits, and now they're down to 3. And the company we talked to, they said this was all due to modeling capabilities. These other companies, they didn't have the same modeling capabilities that the 3 that remained did, so they ended up dropping out of dropping out of the market. So I think it will be interesting to see what happens in the future and if we see any consolidation between companies or anything changing in the market and what's offered.
That was third-year PhD candidate in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, Sarah Sellers. She's written several articles that are posted on the FarmDoc website. You can search FarmDoc daily for carbon, and you should come up with them. Her advisor is Gary Schnitke. Let's check the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics. Thank you, Mark, so much for being with us on this gorgeous Monday. However, I believe that it's the rest of the week that might be problematic. Over the weekend, of course, the eastern seaboard had difficulties with some snowfall. What parts of the nation are you most concerned about this week?
Yeah, certainly the nation's midsection is going to be the main area of note here coming up this week, and that is due to extreme wintry conditions. In fact, a storm system will be tracking from the southern plains up across the Midwest on into southeastern Canada, and along its track, it will produce a band of moderate to heavy snow and even some significant ice. In areas such as like in around Oklahoma region here into the Ohio River Valley region. And then north of there will be a band of very heavy snow. And it's actually shaping up to be one of the biggest snow storms that areas such as central Illinois and northern Indiana has seen in quite some time.
I take it that the icy boundary of this storm is a bit hard to quantify, at least early on, because it's not really clear what the track of the storm might be. Is that coming into any focus?
I think they're beginning to hone in on the Ohio River Valley area. So southern Illinois, southern half or so of Indiana, from just in around Indianapolis or just south of there, towards the Ohio River, and then even, again, that band of icing will extend further to the north and east as well. So beginning to hone in on that area. Obviously, things can still change here as we have another couple of days to go, but beginning to at least get a better handle on that zone of heavier icing coming up.
You mentioned the storm track will come out of the southern plains and Oklahoma. I'm wondering about the hard red winter wheat growing regions, which have been very dry, lack snow cover at this point. Will they get very much snow, and how cold might it be?
Yeah, coming up here for the southern plains, again, from a macro standpoint, we continue to not see any widespread meaningful precipitation totals that would significantly improve the dryness. But there will be some precip associated with this storm system. And the system will produce a wintry mix of snow, sleet, and some ice there in the southern plains. But you have to go further east into areas of central eastern Kansas and central Oklahoma, where precipitation amounts will be a bit more meaningful. But again, some of that is going to be in the form of ice, and so not necessarily melting, you know, directly into the soil here. So, but that looks to be really the only opportunity for just some minor precipitation. And again, that's not enough to turn around the situation. Following the storm system, there will be some colder air working its way, and actually during the storm system as well, colder air moving down into the areas, both of the plains, hard red and the Midwest, soft red winter wheat. But we do not see any winter kill threats, as we feel there will be ample snow in the plains and the Midwest to protect from any extreme cold.
What are you watching in South America this week?
Well, Todd, in South America, we're seeing the pattern now feature generally drier bias in Argentina, but that's not going to be combined with any kind of heat. So no severe crop stress is expected these next few weeks for developing corn and soybeans. Now up in Brazil, southern Brazil has started to see some relief, and they will have more opportunities for relief coming up as the pattern features generally near normal rainfall. And then further up north into center west Brazil, It'll be a normal to even wetter than normal pattern there, which could cause some minor disruptions in soybean harvesting and winter corn planting.
Thanks so much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He's with Everstream Analytics. Greg Johnson from TGM, Total Grain Marketing here in Champaign County, Illinois, now joins us to talk about what's been happening in the cash grain markets. Good afternoon to you. Thanks so much for being with us, Greg. I do want to talk about futures just a bit to see what impact this is having on the cash grain market. Corn is lower, or at the time we talked during the day, a bit lower. Soybeans are higher. I made note that at least my local grain elevator soybean bid was breaking just slightly today. Is that something that's happening across the United States or in your sector as well?
Yeah, soybean basis is a little weaker. We are, for two reasons, I think. One, I think the exports that have been happening are getting covered, and so maybe there's not quite the demand that there was early. And number two, we are well over $14, approaching 14. Well, let's see, the high of the day has been 14.97, so we almost got to $15 on the board today, and that is generating some farmer interest in selling. So combination of a pickup in farmer selling and some of the demand being covered, I think that has led to a little bit weaker basis in the soybeans. Not so in the corn or the wheat, though.
I'm totally surprised farmers want to sell $15 beans.
If they didn't sell them at 13 or 14, they probably should sell them at 15. And then when they go to 16, they'll remind me that I said they should sell them at 15 as well.
Yes, they will. tell me about new crop in this process and how an elevator handles this. Because today you're thinking, well, we're short or whatever is the case, but we look to the fall and we still have to have bids that are following the futures markets. How complicated is that for a grain elevator?
New crop futures are about $1.20, $1.25 less than the old crop. So that's already factored in to some extent. We are factoring in, a couple million more bean acres. And at this point, all you can do is assume a normal yield. And so if you take 2 million more acres of beans times a normal yield, we should be selling 1350 cash beans. But obviously, all it takes is one weather hiccup this summer and beans are off to the races again. So probably the right strategy is to get some sold at these prices and then maybe lock in some floors if you want to get a little bit more aggressive on the sales.
What happened in the corn market that it moved lower through midday?
Wheat. Wheat's down 25 cents, and I think the wheat market is pressuring the corn market. The fundamentals really haven't changed on corn. Dry weather in South America probably impacts the beans at this point more so than the double crop corn, as it's just now getting planted. If it would stay dry down there, obviously, then the corn market will catch a rally, but it's just too soon to worry about the double crop corn in South America just yet.
Anything else in the cash market that we ought to discuss before I let you go?
You hit it right on the head with your first question. Bean basis, especially out west, is weaker. We're seeing a pickup in farmer movement. So for farmers that still are holding on to beans, this might not be a bad time to let the market have some of those.
I'll let you know when it gets to $16. Hey, thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM, Total Grain Marketing, from right here in Champaign County, Illinois. You've been listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.